Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Addiction Unlimited podcast, where you get to learn everything you want to know about addiction and recovery. I'm your host, Angela Pugh, co-founder of Kansas City Recovery, life coach, and recovering alcoholic. To learn more about me, you can listen to episode zero on your podcast app or find us on the web at addictionunlimited.com. Hello, my friends. Welcome to episode number 119 of the Addiction Unlimited podcast. I'm your coach, Angela Pugh, here to help you figure out this sober life and live happy. I mean, none of us quit drinking because we want to be miserable, right? And it takes a little more effort than just not taking the drink, especially if we want to have happy and full lives. So things in my world have been super busy, super incredible, and so much fun. We've had so many things going on. The online virtual summit I was telling you guys about, I think that's starting to wrap up like the last few days. I think the last few expert videos are coming out. Mine went live last Tuesday, and the summit is called the Art of Intervention Project, the Art, A-R-T, of Intervention Project. And it was totally online, totally free, experts from across the country, all different topics. It was really pretty amazing, especially for free. And I did a couple of Facebook Lives about it in our Facebook group. If you want to check that out, if you're not a part of our Facebook group, you should definitely jump in there. It's Addiction Unlimited. And then also the cart for the membership has been open, and it's only open for, I think, about 48 more hours from right now. It closes tomorrow night. So if you want to join that membership group, you should jump in there and do that quickly because time is running out, my friends. And the membership is really phenomenal. We've had so many new people join. It's really fun. In our private chat, we have a totally private chat group just for members, and it has been amazing. So many new people, and the energy is good, and everybody's just supporting one another and loving one another. It's really awesome. And yesterday, we did the Sober Vision Workshop. I was blown away. You guys are so amazing. I made a workbook that was really fantastic, and we went through the workbook, and I gave you some things to work on outside the workshop and really get clear on that vision and what you want to do and what you want to accomplish. And I'm totally looking forward to doing more of those things too. It was just really fun for me to get to connect with you guys, to get to meet you and have conversations with you is so much fun for me. And that's one of the things I love too about our membership site, because we have two online meetings every week. And that's the chance that I get to actually meet you guys and have conversation with you in those meetings. So I love any opportunity to do that. And we're going to do some more workshops also, because I think that was really fun. And it was cool. It was a great thing just to offer some help. And it was totally free also. All good stuff, all free stuff. I mean, there's so much happening. I'm so excited about it. I woke up this morning and I kind of made a mistake, you guys. I watched a little bit of the news, or I listened to a little bit of the news, and I stopped watching the news pretty early on in quarantine because it was just so defeating. You know, like every time I watch it, I would just feel drained and my anxiety would be up, and it just wasn't good. You know, it did not make me feel good to hear all the doom and gloom. Not that I want to bury my head in the sand and be unaware, but I also don't want to be just feeding my brain all that negativity all the time either, because I will internalize that pretty heavy and not feel good about it. So I stopped watching the news a long time ago, but I have been a little concerned as I hear people talking about the coronavirus numbers going back up, and it sounds like it's getting pretty scary again. And it just makes me sad, to be honest, because I can't figure out like what the heck, like why is it getting so bad again? Like, we were basically on lockdown forever trying to get it under control. We know the things to do to be well and be safe. Like, I just don't understand how it's getting so out of control again. It really makes me think about my alcoholism. And I feel like the coronavirus is so, it's such a predator, just like my alcoholism is such a predator, like literally just stalking people, waiting for just the right moment to jump on you and take you down, you know? And that's how my alcoholism is. And then that's how coronavirus is. And I don't know that either one of them mean to be bad, but they are. And I don't want to be a part of either damn one of them. So that's why we're here. We're going to make sure that we don't fall prey to alcoholism for sure. We want to make sure we stay on track. We're doing well. I really want you guys to feel good when you put down the drink. You know, that's so important to me because this journey is difficult. There's no question it's difficult. And there are going to be hard moments. There are definitely moments I don't feel great. You know, that's just life. Life is really, really hard. And at the same time, I want you to have those moments of triumph where you really understand what you're accomplishing and you can really recognize yourself and your effort, even when you don't feel great. You have to remember that you're really doing something freaking incredible on a daily basis, even when you don't feel great. It's still incredible. And I think you're going to love this interview coming up today too, because this is the real stuff. This is a real client work that worked with me privately. And I love having real clients on the show because I feel like it's more relatable a lot of times for you guys. Like I have a lot of knowledge and I know this thing works and I can walk you through a lot of stuff and help you do it better. No question. I've been sober a long time. Like I get it. At the same time, I've been sober a long time. And sometimes that makes people less relatable. Like I'm sure sometimes you guys are like, oh yeah, whatever. You've been sober 100 years, like whatever. You know, because I've been sober a long time. So when I can have people on the show that are in the first year, in the first 6 months, I feel like those are the people that really resonate and that really are the most special interviews. And I'm going to tell you, this one was freaking fantastic. And we actually recorded this quite a while ago. I've been hanging on to this because, you know, we've been in the midst of doing so many other things and I was doing double episodes for a while. So I've been hanging on to this one. And when I got it out and sat down to do the editing, I was listening to it and I was like, wow, this interview is really special. Like it's incredible. And this is a strong person who really made a commitment to his sobriety. From the moment he hit the button to work with me, he knew he was in it. And it has been a beautiful journey to be a part of. I'm so grateful that I got to work with him. And he really articulates that early time and the struggle, right? The early time in sobriety, but also the struggle before you get to the place of ready to just throw in the towel and get sober and stop effing around. You are going to love this. This is Mike, and Mike just celebrated 6 months sober.
Mike was a listener of Addiction Unlimited podcast before I then took him hostage. And now he is a part of our inner circle team in every sense of the word and our Monday night group. And I'm super excited for him to share his story with you guys. Well, first of all, thank you for coming on the podcast and doing this and having this conversation with me. I really appreciate you being willing to share your story.
You should thank me, Angela, because spending time with you is an absolute chore. I know everyone starts the pod with, oh my God, so great to be here. Thank you. I thought I'd be different. But anyways, no, seriously, I appreciate it. I've loved all of our time together and the groups and never thought I'd be in this chair talking to you, hoping to do any iota of the same benefit that it was done for me by the other hundreds of people that I've talked to you before that I listened to on my way to finding you eventually and on this journey. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. So tell everybody a little bit about your journey, what it looked like, how you ended up here.
you know, like a lot of folks, it takes a long time to realize you have a problem, especially when your life's going pretty well. So you talk about a high bottom all the time. And fortunately, I was spared any great huge malady or incarceration or some of the things that typically accompany, you know, addiction recovery. But you know, like a lot of folks grew up in a great home, have an awesome family. My parents are still together, celebrating 50 years. I was raised in the South, where alcohol was just a part of the culture. People just drank at parties and crawfish boils, et cetera. And it was just a part of growing up. And as I reached, you know, teenage and college years, I experienced what you've talked a lot about in your pods, which is a greater affinity for the drink than anyone around me. You know, I was always the first guy to suggest we have a party, which you imagine in college and right afterwards makes you pretty popular. Also starting out a career in a big company with a lot of people my age, you know, made me a lot of fun to be around. So my drinking was really celebratory for my teens and 20s, and didn't really get in the way of a whole lot. And I graduated college. I got a decent job. I met a wonderful woman who I'm still married to today, and I haven't managed to, you know, not screw that one up pretty good. So the drinking for a long time was a compliment, it seemed, to my life through our 20s. And my, you know, my job took us, you know, moved around a little bit. My wife and I were building our lives together. So in the back of my mind, yeah, I was usually the last one at the bar. I was the first one to suggest, let's get a drink. And at company functions, you know, particularly would be the one that, you know, you would talk about the next day, but it didn't really have a huge sharp side yet. But looking back, those are probably reinforcing my behaviors more than anything. Entering the 30s, you know, I want to start having a family. And we were lucky enough, my wife gave birth to twins. And that was the first major time I started to notice that I was drinking in places that had no place, no business drinking, right? With, you know, babies, right? And they're trying to put babies to sleep with a Manhattan in one hand and a baby in the other. It's probably not a good idea. And I would notice that, things I would think about, what kind of example am I setting? So my kids really got me thinking about it. And on top of that, noticing some stress now happening between my wife and I, that I was not as available. And so what happened, unfortunately for me, is I didn't pick up on those signs at that time where I should have. And added probably a decade to my drinking career that was unnecessary. And that's when the isolation started. And I think, you know, for looking back at that period of life, if I had seen the path that was going to take me down and how much removed from my family it would have caused me to be, I would have maybe picked up and stopped then. But I unfortunately didn't heed those warnings. And in the next decade, became what I would envision. My kids maybe not agree. They were young at the time. Really not a good dad and probably not a great husband. As I wanted to continue drinking and drinking more, which anyone listening to this podcast understands that desire only increases over time. You have to drink more to get the same effect. You therefore then have to drink more creatively in different ways for longer periods and earlier in the day. And it can have a huge negative impact on your life. And I was never a day drinker. I didn't, you know, interfere with my work, thankfully. But at night when I would get home, I would absolutely retreat to the places in the house where I could drink and not be bothered. And we again, my career continued to move forward and we moved around. And so there were no outside looking in implications. I was pretty damn successful drunk, if I do say so myself. You can relate to that. So. But inside, you know, it was tearing me up. Like I would always feel guilty about it. And the next day, of course, you got the physical maladies that drag on. But then there's the guilt and the shame, the sleepless nights. And then there's, you know, your relationships deteriorate. So we had a move where it was our toughest move ever. We did 2 years in a place that none of us liked. It was something I did to advance my career. Looking back, I might have made a different decision, but those 2 years were really hard on my wife, and everything she knew went away, lost all of her friends. We were living in this faraway place, doing a tough job for my company, which again paid off because where we landed was far better afterwards. But those 2 years were definitely a 2-year low. You know, I was drinking excessive amounts. My wife was a bit depressed, and rightly so, because I'd taken her away from everything she loved. Our kids were so young that they didn't really feel it, but when we finally got out of there, we were on the celebration side of leaving, right? But the drinking never went away. It got worse and worse. So I'll finish my story. I know I'm going to get long-winded here briefly, but things came to a head at the end of 2019. We're now back in a new place where we really like it. We got a nice house, good setup. and things are getting back to normal. But the drinking, I thought when the misery ended, I could get it back, and it just got worse and worse. So enter my not official sponsor, good friend, that was a catalyst for me. I had a good buddy come to town, and this is one of my real hard drinking friends. We would go deep. And we went out and we had one of our typical nights, and we were staying in the city where I live and in the hotels just to tear it up. And I invited some people to come with us that I knew, that it ended up devolving into this drunken, not brawl, but embarrassing, like, you know, back and forth between he and I. We basically accusing each other of being drunks. You know, you got a problem. No, you got a problem. Fuck you. You got a problem. And it was, looking back, we laugh about now because he's sober, I'm sober. And that was for us a kick in the ass about, we both are telling each other we have this problem, but we are telling ourselves. And I drove him to the airport the next day, and we still were bickering about it. And because I was embarrassed by his behavior, he was embarrassed by mine. And to his credit, he went home and he looked hard in the mirror, and my friend did something about it. And he joined AA. And that was, I want to say, September, October of 2019. And in the months that followed, I got to follow his journey and listen to him as he changed and went from this, same thing I was, just aggressive, angry guy, to this so peaceful, happy, calm person that had no more hate and fear in his life and was restoring his relationships. And so I went to the holidays last year, and he really was bottom the whole time. I couldn't drink enough. I was finding reasons to drink at odder and odder times and isolating more. And the real bottom for me was, as I'm talking to my friend this whole way through, and he's trying to help me find my way. It was a Sunday night. It was January 19th, 2020. And I'd had a long weekend of my typical behavior, which was to basically go through almost a bottle of vodka and a bottle of rum and a 12 pack of beer, just drinks throughout the day, starting at noon, you know, and isolated in the garage. I'm sitting in my office watching my TV, some dumbass show that doesn't mean anything. And I'm trying to keep my kids and my wife away from me because I don't want them to smell how drunk I am, right? Anyone that's listening will appreciate that. Like, oh, if I just isolate, it won't be real. And my son, who's kind of nervous, he's 11 at the time, walks in my office and wants to talk. He's got something coming up at school the next day. He's nervous about it, wants to talk through it. And I keep it at arm's length. I remember extending my hand, going, hey, Dad's busy right now. Sitting in my easy chair, TV's in front of me, got my huge vodka soda to my right. I'm like, hey, Dad's busy. He's like, really? He's like, I want to talk. I said, hey, well, can we talk tomorrow? And he goes, yeah. He slumps his shoulders and he turns around and he starts walking away. And he looks over his shoulder back at me with the saddest face. And it broke my freaking heart. And I looked at him walking away sad. And I thought, that's an 11-year-old me. And if I'm not available to my boy, I'm going to teach him the way to cope with your problems is to medicate, because that's what Dad does. And I started to cry, and I sat there and thought to myself, what the fuck am I doing? What point am I going to take ownership here? And I reached over instinctively and grabbed that drink, and I drank the rest of that drink, in part because I think I knew it was my last one. And the next morning, I woke up, I listened to two podcasts from you on my hour-long commute to work, feeling like total shit the whole time. I get to my first conference call. I'm sitting in my office, standing there, looking at the phone. I had filled out the online application for your 2K program, and my finger was hovering over the send button. And I'll never forget that moment as evidence of a higher power, because something came over me to actually accept the responsibility for my actions, and I pushed submit. And then a wave of relief came over me unlike anything I've ever experienced, because I'd finally said it to somebody else that I'm ready to quit.
Oh, I love that. That's so good. Now, backing up a little bit, because you talked about drinking and it was kind of a consistent throughout your life for sure. What would you say, like, how old were you when you first recognized that you did it differently? Like, how old were you when you had your first thought of, like, maybe I have a problem?
College, for sure. And just being, we were the house that always had the parties, which was, again, not a downside. You meet a lot of people, you have a lot of fun, but to always be the one finishing the keg every time, you know, like, where's everybody going? Why are you going home? And you make this example so well. why are you going home and going to bed? It's still, we can still drink. Like, we're still awake. Why aren't we drinking more? And again, I surrounded myself with people like that, so it didn't feel as awkward. But, you know, like a lot of folks, there were periods of cleanliness too, of great health. And, you know, in my 20s, where I would stop for months at a time, and I don't have a problem. See, look at me. I don't have a problem. See, but it picks right up where it left off. And being able to consume the amounts I was able to consume and still function was just unnatural. So, you know, also type A, and like a lot of your listeners and people you work with, you believe that the world's under your control and you can influence the things around you. You can manipulate people. You can use your sense of humor, your gift of gab, your emotions. And for some people, it's their body and whatever else to get people to do what they want them to do. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I had a pretty successful run at that, never realizing it was manipulative to serve my alcoholism, but mm-hmm. it really was. And it had other professional benefits. You know, if you're aggressive and hardworking and can sell and do those things, you can move up. And I've been very fortunate in life, and I'm at a point where I think I now take full stock of those blessings, want to use those skill sets to help myself and others, but to do it without alcohol. And really thankful that I took ownership. That there's a lot of people have to make that decision themselves. And again, I keep referencing to, I was the guy listening to this podcast for nearly a year, not taking ownership, but getting more comfortable every time with, well, there's another person not just like me. Well, there's another person that's just like me. And you're listening to this, you feel so all alone, and you're the only one that has these problems, and you're just, nobody will get me because I'm such a fuck up and I'm such a tragedy of a person. And then I start listening to you, and you got train wrecks on left and right. They were going way off the rails worse than I. And it's so comforting that you're not alone. And that's what this community has been for me. I can't express my gratitude enough that there are so many people willing to listen to you and help you understand there's a way through it. They're really, light on the other side is so bright.
Yeah, because we do all feel that way. We all feel like we're the worst. You know, I was the same way when I first got sober. I remember going in AA and I literally thought that like I was the biggest piece of shit on the planet. And I just had no idea, because my story definitely has some tragedy for sure. You know, my walk in rock bottom was not a simple or painless one. But I mean, when I started sitting in those rooms and hearing other people's story, I was like, oh, I'm actually kind of a sissy. Like, there's a lot of people that have been through a lot worse stuff than me. And I don't know why we create that in our heads. I guess it's just a lot of that guilt and shame. You just feel like you are so awful. And that was really one of the most important things for me starting the podcast, is really to shed some light on that we all feel exactly the same way. Just like people talk about being fearful going to a meeting their first time. Like, every single person in that room had the same feeling. We were all terrified. Almost every one of us at some point drove into a parking lot of an AA meeting and turned around and drove out at least once before we made it in the door. Like, we all have that same stuff. And I think that's also what makes it so comforting once you're in.
Absolutely.
Yeah, once you can kind of drop all of that, like the spotlight we put on ourselves, once you can kind of drop that and go, oh, damn, I'm just like everybody else here. Okay, cool.
You talk about this all the time, but it creates this unjustified fear in yourself that is paralyzing. And so there's a great quote, I think I've shared this with you already, that I love. It's by a guy named George Adair. It's called, "Everything You've Ever Wanted Is on the Other Side of Fear." And while I think that quote resonated with me over the years and it pushed me to do things I was uncomfortable with, it is so applicable to our disease. Because if everything you know has created this shitstorm that you now live in, but it's all you know, it's terrifying to step out of it. And then if you're anything like me, you spend all this wasted energy going, well, when I'm not drinking, what about this event? And what about this thing that's going to happen? How am I going to fit in here? And this person's going to notice, and I don't want to be, you know, odd man out, or how am I going to deal with this thing or whatever? And it's hilarious to me now. I've jumped through all these hoops where I thought it was going to be super hard, and it was to not drink. It's not hard not to drink. And I'll just share something. but I've discovered this could be totally wrong. You disagree with me. The only people that care about whether or not you're drinking are the other drunks. So if you're at an event and he goes, where's your beer? Where's your, why aren't you drinking that? Folks, those are the people that are going to need your help.
It's so true. It's so absolutely true because other people don't care. In fact, people that don't have an issue with alcohol don't even notice if you're drinking alcohol or not because it's just not on their radar. They don't care at all.
Not at all.
My next question for you is, you decided to take action in January of 2020, but you said you were listening to the podcast for a year. So at what point did you start doing that research? Because that's super common too. Many of us, when we start to feel like anything in our life is out of control, right? We'll do the same thing with relationships. We do the same thing with work stuff. When you start to feel like something isn't going well, we go into this sort of self-help, self-improvement thing. And back in the day before podcasts, it was, we all rushed to the bookstore and bought all the books about, you know, drinking or whatever your issue is. So when did you start recognizing that you were going to have to take action and start doing that research?
The first time I ever did, I was in my 30s, and I was in that point where kids were just born and I couldn't get a handle on it. And I sent away, I'll never forget, I sent away for this package. It was of pills and CDs and all this stuff and going to help you stop drinking. And the greatest farce of all of this I've learned is it's impossible to stop this alone. If there's one takeaway that the self-help, I try to do all that. It does, it for me, it just doesn't work. I don't have those disciplines. But I got this package in the mail and all this stuff that I opened. I'm like, I take pills. And I was really listening to CDs, and it's like the some guy talking over a pan flute. And I'm going, this is horse shit. Like, I'm not that type of guy. Like, it, you would have been better off having a rumbling, V8 engine revving up and going, quit fucking drinking now. Yeah, I probably would have responded way better to that. But anyways, I call and I sent that shit back. And I'm like, that done. I don't need it. And I actually kicked it for a while. Like, ah, I'm so mad at myself that I need some hokey stuff like this. I forget it. Ah. And then it just, it always comes back, right? If you don't deal with it. And then the second time was, I can't remember the second time was, it was the years leading up to finding you, but it was moderation management. Have you ever heard of that program?
Yeah, that's what I was originally going to do in my 20s when I knew I was really drinking out of control. That was my grand plan because we had meetings in LA, right? Because she was in LA. So we had actual moderation management meetings. And that was my big plan is I was going to go to moderation management and learn how to moderate. The problem was the first thing you have to do in moderation management is not drink for 30 days.
Yeah.
And as soon as I read that, I was like, oh, I'm out. I can't do that.
I read up on that whole program, which is kind of snake oil for a guy like me because it promises something that isn't real. But yeah, I did it. I did 30 days. I was just crazy proud of myself. And I rewarded myself right afterwards without, you know what, I'll just drink on weekends. I'll just drink on the weekends and the days bordering the weekends. Okay, I won't drink Wednesday. Okay, I won't drink more than 4 on Wednesday. Like, and you make all these bullshit rules. And so on. And then, I would just turn my back on it and just try to hope it would go away. And again, all the time I'm professionally succeeding, which is enabling probably more of it because the money's not the issue. And I'm, so the biggest one though was telling another person. And that's what was contracting with you and sending out that application or the, which by the way, for everyone listening, Angela has a ton of programs. You don't have to spend anything. She'll help you for free. And those courses, podcasts are amazing. I know you probably don't want to say that, but I signed up for the pay for one because goddammit, I'm a VIP and I want VIP treatment in my mind. All this crazy stuff that goes through your head and I deserve, But sending off that acknowledgement to you, I tried to talk to you about it before. I tried to talk to people in my family about it. It just kind of gets embarrassing. You blow it off. That for me was the straw that broke the camel's back. And I'm talking to some other folks now that I'm acquaintances of mine that are seeing my progress and asking more questions. I can see it in them. We are the stubbornest group of people, alcoholics, that God has ever created. And so you can't force this treatment on anybody. It has to be in your own time. So if you're out there listening and going, oh, this guy sounds like me, or he sounds like somebody I would hang out with, or maybe reasonable, rational, you won't get there until you're ready. Like, you got to be ready for a different life. Yeah. And just, let me just share this. It is everything you've ever wanted and more. All the fear of being gone, all the shame being gone, being able to be prideful of yourself and pat yourself on the back, not apologizing, not forgetting about the night before, not worrying. Oh, don't let me get started on work. Holy shit, you get a second brain for your job. Did you know this? You get a half brain back. Like, everybody's job gets like overnight easier. You ready to succeed in your job? Quit drinking. It's amazing.
It's amazing. Yeah, I was actually thinking about you a few weeks ago. I was reading, you know, I do a lot of stuff in that color code, and you've heard the color code episodes and the different color personalities. And I suspect you and I are the same color, because I'm a red and we're very much alike. And I was reading something about a red personality in the workplace and kind of how we respond to things. And I was thinking about all the conversations you and I've had about you at work, right? And how you were, especially in the very beginning, like how you were internalizing that, how your behavior was different, how it was affecting your employees. And I was just laughing because as red personalities, we can be very hard on people, whether we mean to or not. And then for you getting this whole other piece of your drive back and having your memory and having greater motivation and doing more and accomplishing more. I was like, oh my gosh, his poor team.
Yeah, no, I didn't know what hit him. I feel for him. But, you know, there's also the balance of that. And I think I'm, in addition to being hyper-focused, more capable than ever, dialed in, like your brain's not working just 25% of the time. It actually is working most of the time. And not having the 3 hours off in the morning where you're just ungrogging. It's helped me be more considerate, though, too. I'm remembering people's contributions also and being able to recognize them. And that's what helps build the great team, is everyone feeling like their contributions are valued and that they get the help they need. And we've been powering through a pretty unusual time in human history right now, and having full faculty has been a game changer. So definitely, you know, yeah. I know a lot of people are unemployed, and this is the time to be on your A game.
Yeah. I think too, that's one of the most beautiful things about recovery, because we are very stubborn, but we're very selfish and self-centered. And one of my favorite things, being a sober person, is that I actually have the ability to recognize what's going on for someone else. You know, whereas when I was drunk, I had zero awareness. I never even recognized how my behavior might affect someone else. And I remember really thinking that everything I was doing was only affecting me. And I remember kind of being baffled by people's response to me sometimes. So I was like, what the fuck is wrong with these people? Like, I'm only hurting myself, because I was alone, right? I wasn't married. I didn't have anybody living in my house. I didn't have to hide anything. So I really thought, I was like, it only affects me. It doesn't have anything to do with these people. And getting to step out of that and really see the wake, you know, I always talk about the wake, like I take an action and it has a wake that goes out and out in the world and affects all those other layers. And to be able to even recognize that and then to care is only a result of my recovery, I promise you.
Yeah, there's certainly some blissful ignorance as an alcoholic, because why are so many people bent out of shape? It's not about you. Everything you do does affect other people. But yeah, again, the perspective and the clarity that comes back, it's almost overwhelming. I've just celebrated 4 months and working on, you know, steps through the AA program of accepting defects of character, working, you know, with someone else. And it's just a flood of stuff that you just spend years burying under booze. And I like to think I'm not that complicated. It's going to be different for me. This path's going to be, everyone talks about these steps, blah, blah, blah. You guys have all this baggage. Good luck. You know, I don't have that baggage. I'm pretty normal. And then you get digging in, you go, oh no, oh boy, what's under this bottle? Oh, yikes. I kind of forgot about that one. So, and then I really start to appreciate my wife and the people that didn't freaking give up on me, right? Because I must have been a real piece of work through some of those times when I wasn't even aware of it.
Yeah. I say that a lot for our families. You know, when we start to recognize, even like you saying, we're really stubborn people, I always think of the people around us and how much they had to deal with. Or I remember talking to someone's wife several months ago, probably the fall of last year. And she's like, I just don't know why he's doing this. And I was like, well, we don't know either. You know, like I'm baffled too. I don't know why I was doing it, but I just always think about the people around us and what they put up with that we may never really fully understand, but we are challenging in a lot of ways. We are challenging and very much not present in the lives of the people around us, right? Because we do have so much of that selfishness and self-absorbed, and not that it's intentional. I don't mean to make us sound like monsters, because I don't believe that at all. I believe it's just survival. Right? Like I had to manipulate all the puzzle pieces and get them to go the way I want. It was just survival, because I had to maintain my life and I had to maintain my drinking life. You know, I wasn't horrible on purpose.
Not at all. I mean, alcohol is totally a symptom of other things you're dealing with, that, and it gets you in a spot where you're unable to deal with the causes. And it barrels you into a narrower and narrower end the more you use it. And it makes you less, takes away your peripheral vision. It takes away, not really, but, you know, emotionally, and it takes away your care and concern, and it becomes the normal, right? And that self-serving attitude, again, if it's ambition that it manifests itself in, the thirst for money, competition, those aren't all bad things for your life. So there can be false positives that this is a good thing. And look how it's working for you, as it certainly did for me. That can delay your acknowledgement, but man, one thing I used to listen to people on your podcast say, if you're listening to this podcast, you know, you're probably going to quit forever. And that first step, which you had your Kevin on the Inner Circles talking about this, that first step of acceptance is the acceptance that you can't drink anymore ever. And boy, I spent 10 years on that one. There's got to, wow, now, hey, I don't think you understand this. I'm a super achiever. There's another way. There's a fast lane for guys like me. Don't you get that? Like, I know that rules for the rest of you guys. But over here in the TSA pre-check, you know, I'm good. There's another way. Like, you guys, who's going to give me the other way? And it's so funny. Every now and then when people will come into AA and just say, hey, I'm here to get what's the secret to drink reasonably? And you have to get to a point where I can't drink ever again. And it's almost sad in a way, because you're breaking up with this crazy person or thing you've dated forever that is so bad for you and toxic, yet all the best pictures in your phone came from your time with that person, yet they've got to go away. It's over.
I love that analogy. It's so true, because it really is a toxic relationship. I mean, it's an abusive and toxic relationship. But of course, just like a real person-to-person relationship, there's always going to be pain in that separation. You know, and you do have some really great selfies together, for sure. One of the things I love that you said a few minutes ago is you talked about, like, that you have to get to that place on your own, right? Like, I can't talk somebody into rock bottom. You know what I mean? Like, you really have to get there. It has to be, it's a place inside of you. You know, it really is a place that you get to that is, holy shit, I cannot do this anymore. I can't live like this. I can't take another freaking moment. And that's where you get willing to go to all these kind of extreme measures and do stuff that you wouldn't normally do, but you have to have that willingness. And I read something the other day, just yesterday, actually, it was so good. And it said, I can explain it to you, but I can't understand it for you.
Well said.
And yeah, right. I thought it was such a good insight, because I can give you all the answers, for sure. I try to in every podcast. I'm trying to give the inside view, pull the curtain back and tell you what's really going on, but I can't understand it for you. Like, what was your... how did you get to that place of understanding? What did that feel like for you? And I know you told us the story about your son and walking out of the room, and that was really your moment, for sure. But what was it that gave you the gumption even the next day to follow through and actually get help?
Another way to say what you're saying is, you can't wish a fat man skinny. So, you know, and one thing is, One thing I realized about myself, I'm amazing at giving advice, just not so great at taking it. So, especially when it comes to my wife, the acknowledgement that, okay, let me back up, because I think it's even more dangerous now in our world than it ever, and I don't mean right now. I mean, this is the comparison culture. We've talked about that. How much your life should be versus what it is. What do you have that you, what do you not have that you should have? You know, what is social media even, which is the creator of all this nonsense, telling you you should be living? And I feel fortunate to be I skirt the out realms of Twitter and Instagram. I'm not that deep in it, but I feel for the decades of kids coming up that are in that life where it's just a nonstop snippet of the best part of someone's day, and you think that's their whole normal. And so wishing for something better or not being, you know, chasing something that I don't have. Alcohol was always part of those dreams, you know, and you talked about this, how different your life is as far as execution versus, you know, daydreaming on the backside of drinking. And when you're drinking, you daydream. And you always find, oh, we're going to go do this tomorrow, or it's going to be great. Woo! And the next day is, oh, I'm over and not doing anything. Versus now when you're sober, you get online, you book the tickets, you make the plans, and you go. So I don't know what held me out of it for so long, but the belief that I could outthink it, that I could find a way to balance it. I didn't really have to give it up. My identity was tied to drinking. That probably was the biggest thing. And I couldn't imagine a life without it, and always thought there was another way, because any problem I've ever faced in life, I've been able to figure a way around it. And that's very good professionally to solve this situation, or to befriend an account that sworn us off, or to overcome some big professional hurdle. You know, we struggled to have children, but we found a way around it. Right. So there's all these things. I have these examples, and I just wasn't, it took me a long time to understand that there isn't any other way than just to acknowledge it and swear it off. I don't know if that answers your question, but I think a lot of folks, and speaking for myself, hold back on accepting full responsibility, in part because it's a medicate, right? It serves a purpose. It is solving the deeper problems you haven't really addressed. And I am, just for clarity's sake, I am nowhere near through that process yet. So, dear listener, do not think that I sit on this throne on the other side with Angela, knees crossed in the yoga pose, going, ha-ha, laughing at people who still struggle. We're all struggle. Everybody struggles. But this comparison culture makes you feel more isolated because you think you see what everyone else has going right. Every single person, probably people on Instagram and Twitter, are more jacked up than the rest of us because of their need for attention. But you've got to remember that everybody's got their issues. Nobody doesn't have some skeletons or their burdens to bear. And you got to deal with yours. And if not for yourself, and I shame myself still because I probably should have learned this sooner, but I'm happy to do it for my son and my daughter and my wife. And I had been the best dad I've ever been. And I think a way better husband in the last 4 months, super present. And way more attentive, and there's no more fear in my wife's eyes on how much is he going to drink today. She said something really, I think I told you this is really, this before you. When I confessed to her that I have a problem and I'm seeking some recovery and help, she was thrilled. And, you know, so that was day one. And as the week went by, I sort of started to sober up, my head cleared up, and I asked her, I said, hey, what was it like the last couple of years? And I know I don't know where I'm at. I'm working through this. I don't even know if I should be asking this question. She looked me stone cold in the face. And she looked at me without breaking a sweat. She goes, no, I had just decided I couldn't help you anymore. I had tried. Every time we had tried to help you and told you it was too much, you got mad. And I think I'd accepted that I was going to lose you to this disease. You were going to die and I was going to have to take care of the kids. And like, bam, to have your spouse, the person that you've devoted your life to, give up on you because they can't change. That's another moment that'll break your heart. And we don't realize how, like, oh, I'm in the garage, I'm not around you, it's not affecting you, the bills are paid, the checks are still coming. What's to be so concerned about? These people love us. They want us around, and they see us killing ourselves, and they don't get it because they don't struggle. I mean, you made the joke a couple of times, teaching us a non-alcoholic about alcoholism is trying to teach a donkey math. You know, it just, there's the different language, there's a language barrier. So people that don't have this problem won't understand, and they don't, therefore, don't get why you can't stop. So only talking to somebody else in this community and letting them share them stories, it makes it normal and makes us all feel like we're not total rejects and there is a way out of it. And every day, it's just life's still stressful. There's still shit that goes wrong, but it's way easier to deal with now. And I'm really, really thankful.
Yeah, for sure. I would love for you to talk about the first time, because drinking was a big part of your career, right? And dinners and business things and outings and colleagues and whatever. And I know there was some trepidation going into the first situation, right, where you're not drinking, but everybody only knows your drunk identity, right? So they have these expectations that you're going to show up to the dinner and behave in a certain way. The party starts. What was it like for you the first time you had to go into a situation as a non-drinker?
And luckily, I had been around a bunch of very good leaders in my career and understood that, at least in my company culture, that swinging from the chandeliers was the way to the exit, right? So I knew early on that no matter how much you drank or didn't, you needed to carry yourself a certain way. So fortunately, I'm the first guy to say, hey, it's time to we put like drink maximums, you know, we would stop people from going beyond two. We would audit our travel expenses to make sure nobody was out of line. So there were governances there. It wasn't what I was doing maybe in the environment. It was back in the hotel, right? So the travel, I would have to pre-plan. I have to pre-plan my after drink because I would have, you know, drinks. I have to have drinks in my room because I have to have a cooler full of beer or my vodka bottle so that when I'm done with my work part, I can go isolate just like at home. And, it brought its own stress. So you try checking into a hotel where everyone's checking in. How do I bring a cooler? I can't bring a cooler in. Like, so I gotta find, like you're laughing, but I gotta find ways to get it in the room without getting any, you know, it's like, cause what if somebody sees me carrying a cooler? Like, that's not cool, right? So there's things like that, but, it was really easy to manage at dinner. I would have a few before in my room after checking in, go to dinner, have the recommended two, live the example. No more than two. Nope, not for me. Thank you very much. Everyone have a responsible night. And then finish a 12-pack in my room. You know, like the behavior was still there, but I found ways around it taking me out. So fast forward to events, you know, post-drinking. The first one, I'll never forget it. I'm not going to get too detailed. But it was a fairly large event, you know, 45, 50 people. We're at a bar with some entertainment stuff, games and whatnot. To imagine the type of place. So everyone's busied off doing games and these things, and we're all, you know, drinking. As I'm walking up to people, you know, only one person asked me where my beer was. I'm like, oh, you know, I'm going to grab it in a second. And that was it. Never a single question the rest of the night. And I also noticed, wow, there's a lot of people that aren't drinking. Look at all these non-drinking people. And I had my water and all night, and it was fine. And no one said, after that, I got in the car. I'm like, holy shit. Like, I worried so much about that night, but it really wasn't that bad, and nobody really cared. Fast forward to the next time, actually hosting a dinner with wine being paired with it and everything, and having a Pellegrino, like people were going, oh, it's one person asked, what's up with the Pellegrino? Oh, I'm training, trying to get back in the cycling shape. Cool. Anyways, and nobody asked again. Nobody cared. And so that fear I created in my mind of, oh, I'm going to be the odd man out. Everyone's going to know. And everyone's going to say, are you a drunk? You know what? It's because I was the asshole doing that to people that I worried it was going to happen to me. So once we get back to more meetings and I'm able to see some of my colleagues again, I got some apologies to the non-drinkers that I got to make out there. Cause I was the guy going, oh, come on. Why did you, I'm ashamed of that behavior, but it's not as big a deal as everybody makes it out to be.
And we do really blow it out of proportion in our head, right? Because we're so uncomfortable with ourselves. Like I always say, I'm always my problem for sure. So if something is nagging me, that's the first thing I have to do is look at me and go, okay, really, Angela, what's your problem? Like, why is it an issue? Like, is it really that big of a deal? Is it easily solvable? Like, what's really going on? Because it's always me. It's almost always me making it a bigger deal than it actually is. And I think all of us have those experiences, you know, where you think it's going to be so uncomfortable and it's going to be so weird. And And I think maybe I even kind of had my feelings hurt a little bit when I realized how little people do care about what I'm doing.
Welcome to planet me.
Right. Like when I got sober, I was actually mad at my family that they didn't do an intervention. I was like, what is wrong with these people? Like they didn't even care. Like they didn't.
Oh, you know, the sad reality is that I don't know who said this, but the graveyard's full of indispensable men is another great quote to remind us just how temporary we really are. And we don't make the world go round. You know, they say two things you know about God. There is one and you're not it, right?
So you're not it, right.
Which I think Kevin said the other day.
All right, best question, final question. What is your favorite thing about being
a sober person? Hope I didn't totally jack the audio on that one. Yeah, I thought about that. And that list, it's a long list, so I'll boil it down. You get to not feel like garbage all the time about yourself, about your relationships, and about your behavior. To be happy that you've had a good, positive impact on the people around you that day. For me, that I've been present with my children and my wife, and that I have been the best version of me that I can that day. And that's a broad stroke. But after you try to combine in one big, messy bucket all the anxieties and fears that you have when you are drinking, taking away drinking takes away all that stuff. It takes a couple weeks for your body to adjust to the first big shock of no alcohol and you eat and all that other stuff. And there's all these emotions that, again, I'm still going through some of that, but there comes a sense of calm early on that you can deal with anything because at least you're dealing with it unfiltered and honestly. And all the alcohol in your system creates all these other crazy emotions, right? It's all where all the wackiness comes from and your, you know, impulsiveness and overreaction and stress. And when all that's gone, life's pretty freaking manageable. Mm-hmm. So I'm just super grateful that I get a chance at hopefully the second half of my life in this mm-hmm. state. When I look back and lost 25 years, not lost, but certainly wasted. I don't want to waste another one. My kids turned 12 last week. We have twins. Dad's first sober birthday, right? And it was great to not be running around and trying to, you know, hide my life. I don't have to hide anything anymore. And I get to be myself 100% of the time. And it's the best, better than I ever thought. And I owe you a great debt of thanks for your podcast work that led me to you. I built a relationship with you from afar for a long time as a listener that engendered a sense of trust in your voice. It was a calming. I would listen to it almost every day when I would feel guilty in the morning. The nights I didn't drink, I would be listening to you on the way home. You were just that some person out there that helped me see there was a way on the other side, even if I wasn't quite ready. And so it made it natural to reach for you first when that time came for me. And your acceptance, your support, that of the entire yours and the AA community is just so welcoming and warm. Mm-hmm. I almost feel like I don't deserve it sometimes for the way I've acted. And the best I can do is help at least one other person find it.
Amen to that. I think most of us feel that way about AA too, for sure. You know, because it is. It's like I say all the time, it's the first place. It's the first room I ever walked into that I felt like it was the first place I ever fit. It was the first time I ever went in somewhere and I was like, oh shit, these are my people. Like I belong here, you know? And yeah, it's amazing. It really is amazing. I always feel a little bit sad for people that are so scared to go or so freaked out by it because I mean, it's truly one of the best things I ever did in my life. So, okay. So I lied. Not last question. Cause I just thought of another one. When you reached out to me, when you decided to actually get help and do something, did you feel confident that you would do it and be successful? Or were you kind of waffling, like not sure if you'd be able to really quit?
I felt so lost. I had absolutely hit that mental bottom. And again, for some people, it's incarceration. It's some of the you know, horror story stuff you hear. It doesn't have to be that. For me, was just a resolution that I'm better than this. I need to talk to somebody. Somebody has an answer that I don't have. I've tried to have my own answer. Everything I've done has failed. The moderation's failed. The promises over and over, the sick, being fat, being everything, all the negative side effects, falling over at a party, you know, having your kids say, "Daddy, you smell like beer." Like none of it did it. Finally, there was a moment, and I just have to attribute it. If I think about my higher power, a lot of people struggle with this, and you talked about, you know, God as a definition, but I had a grandmother that I loved dearly, and she passed 8 or 9 years ago, and we were pretty good friends. And that's just, you know what, that's my higher power right now, is my nanny. And, you know, that's who I envision is up there looking out for me. And that's enough. That's all I need. She's who I talk to, and that's good enough. So your higher power can be your favorite freaking plant. It doesn't even matter, but someone pushing you, something pushing you, recognizing beneath your messy life, there's a better person waiting to come out. All you got to do is step aside, but you got to be ready. And any half attempts are they're a waste of everyone's time. And I made plenty of them, so I know for sure. And I wish upon all the folks that are struggling out there, that moment, all it takes is a moment of clarity to make the step. And to be overwhelmed with pleasant surprise at the reception, right? Between you, between my first AA meeting and the first woman who hugged me. I'll never forget all that. I know now is a weird time, and there's still plenty of Zoom stuff out there to get help. There are people who want to help you. And one thing about AAers, they pounce on newbies, man. They circle you like wolves, man. They want you in because they know how hard it is to come back for that second meeting or to accept the first white chip. But I was really ready. And man, there was just, you look back at moments in your life where you get those little like insights. And there was an episode of Howard Stern years ago. I'm sorry, you asked me one question. I'm getting long-winded. Apologize. But there was a guy, you remember Everybody Loves Raymond, and his brother, that big tall dude on the show, right? I don't know his name, I apologize, but he's sober, and he's been for a long, long time. And he was on the show, and Artie Lang, which everyone knows, a lot of people know Artie Lang, is now sober as well, who struggled for years on Howard Stern with addiction. They were talking about sobriety, and Artie was questioning him, like, yeah, well, can you drink a little bit or whatever? And he had been fully, you know, cleaned out, and he said something, I'll never forget, he's like, "Artie, listen, the other side is so, so good. You don't even know how good it is. You got to try." And it just stuck in my brain. One of those things like, man, one day I'll find out. And that was 15 plus years ago. And I kicked myself for waiting that long because he is dead right. It is amazing.
Mike, thank you again so much for doing this and sharing your story. I love that we all get to spend this time together, and you've been such a gift to our group too. And for everybody out there, I hope you're having a fantastic day, and I will see you next week.
You've reached the end of another great episode of the Addiction Unlimited podcast, candid and honest conversation about addiction and recovery. Be sure to visit us at addictionunlimited.com to join the conversation and access show notes and links to everything we talked about. Love this episode? Please take 30 seconds to subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes to help us improve and give you the information you want. Thanks for listening. See you next week.